Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me take a deep dive into one of the most pressing issues of the day is our business editor, Gabby Lazaridis. So we are going to be talking about piracy and really trying to get a grip on what's going on in the Southern Red Sea. No doubt you've heard about attacks on commercial shipping. So we're doing this not only because it's a very important issue affecting yachting behavior, but also because Gabby has written a brilliant piece for our upcoming adventure special on this very subject. So the September issue of the magazine is out this week, and it has its typical adventure focus. We've got loads of great stuff in there, including a feature on cruising in Antarctica, how to make sure you're cruising as responsibly as you possibly can, as well as the ultimate yachting bucket list. It is a big feature-packed issue, so don't miss it. On the cover, meanwhile, is the quite incredible catamaran This Is It from the Italian Sea Group. So if you didn't catch her at Monaco last year, don't miss this exclusive inside look at one of the most incredible superyachts ever built. But back to the issue at hand. Houthi rebels and their attacks on shipping. Gabby, welcome to the podcast, first of all.
Hi, Stuart. Thanks. Great to be here. You almost got my last name right. I've been working here for nearly 2 years now.
Lazaridis.
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 Yeah.
You are joking.
No.
Oh, my God. All right, I'm going to walk back this whole podcast. Gabby Lazaridis.
You want to go for the intro
there used
again?
To be a great, there used to be a great footballer called Stan Lazaridis. I think it was Stan. He used to play for West Ham.
Grammatically, I can see why people would think Lazaridis.
Yeah. But. I'm ignorant of such things. Lazaridis. Gabby, I'm so sorry. Anyway, let's get to the issue. Houthis and their attacks on shipping. Gabby, why are we talking about Houthis?
So obviously there's a bit of background to this. The Houthis are an Iranian-backed rebel group from Yemen that consider Israel to be an adversary. So when the war broke out in October of last year, they actually started by firing drones and missiles towards Israel. And most of those were intercepted, but then they started targeting commercial ships as they passed through the Gulf of Aden and Southern Red Sea. So obviously a lot of yacht owners are becoming increasingly worried that the situation might escalate to where yachts start becoming targeted. And the Houthis are using anything and everything from guns, shoulder-launched projectiles, and even small rockets, so a yacht could easily sustain damage or fatalities on board. And they also run the risk of being boarded, like the cargo vessel Galaxy Leader that was the first vessel to be targeted in November. It was boarded using a helicopter and hijacked to Yemen, where I believe it's still being held, along with its 25 crew. I'm not sure on that, but so I think owners are rightly feeling a little apprehensive about passing through the area.
So why is all this activity suddenly spiked recently? Is it primarily to do with Israel's invasion of Gaza?
It seems to be, yes. Okay. That's the reason that they're giving.
And the Houthis, so I did a little digging myself. So they are, as you identified, an Iranian-backed Islamist Shia movement. They emerged in the 90s and they control the capital city, Sana'a. And they've been in conflict with Saudi Arabia for some years now. And they've been particularly exercised, obviously, by Israel's invasion of Gaza, and they started attacking shipping. So to date, do we have any idea of how many commercial ships have been attacked?
We do. So there was a report from Vessel Protect, which is a specialist maritime company, and there have been 77 incidents so far where ships have been either approached, attacked, or detained since November. And most of them have been connected to Israel, but there's actually been quite a high proportion that have been linked to the US and the UK. So owners from those countries especially are a bit more concerned at the prospect of going through.
And these attacks are a lot more sophisticated than simply skiffs full of guys toting AK-47s cruising up to the side of tankers. I mean, they're using ballistic missiles, drones fired from shore, missiles fired from shore, anti-ship missiles. So they're quite well armed.
Yes.
Okay. So 77 attacks recorded to date, but none, as far as we know, on leisure vessels.
Officially, no.
Okay.
Or at least not directly related to the Houthis. There's been a couple of maritime security firms we spoke to, and they said there's been a spike in Somali piracy incidents off the coast of East Africa. So just a little ways down from the Gulf of Aden. And their working theory is that all of this is coming from the added commotion being caused by the Houthis. So it's making them a little bit more, I don't want to say daring, but emboldened.
Sure. And so look, despite not none of these attacks directly happening to leisure vessels or private yachts, it is still impacting our world and our industry. Can you just briefly describe how?
Yeah, so the most obvious one that we were able to see is just the decline in yacht traffic in the area. So we looked at traffic in the area on Boat Pro, which is our nifty little super yacht intelligence device, for all of our listeners who aren't already subscribers. You should really get a membership. And we found that there was a 70% decline in traffic compared to last year, 71.4% if you want to be specific. But this was only for the southern Red Sea directly near the Gulf of Aden. If you look in the northern part of the Red Sea, so near Saudi Arabia, the decline was far less noticeable at 15%. On that, there was actually a story that came out recently that said the Suez Canal Authority is lowering the transit fees for yachts under 300 tons. They said it was to support the Egypt boat show, so it'll only be in effect between July and October. But I think the hope is to help encourage traffic back to that area to boost the local tourism sector. And if the recovery takes longer than we'd all hope, then I wonder if they'll extend it and for bigger boats as well.
So 71% drop in superyacht traffic
is quite significant.
Is quite significant. So what are people doing instead?
The main workaround is to dip down and go around Africa. But the problem with that is the extra leg adds a lot of expense in fuel and extra travel time. I think it adds about 5 to 7 days. And when you talk about shipping, there's been this direct inversion of carriers going around the Cape of Good Hope. So last I checked, the IMF was reporting a 65% drop in the volume of commercial trade through the Red Sea since December. And in that same time period, the traffic around the southern tip of Africa rose by 67%. So all of them are just taking that route around the southern tip. But there really doesn't seem to be any good options. I mean, the other option is to go around the Pacific Ocean and pass through the Panama Canal, which is also having its own difficulties at the moment because of the drought. So you can either go around the Cape of Good Hope, which is known for having especially treacherous weather, and try your luck, or you effectively need to complete a full circumnavigation just to get back to the Mediterranean and make 2 ocean crossings in one go.
So none of the options are particularly great, are they? So either you reroute around the southern tip of Africa with all the fuel and time expenses associated with that much longer trip, or you turn right and go across the Pacific, which adds way more time, obviously, to your journey.
And then, imagine it adds, what, half a year at least?
Well, yeah, I would have to look into that for quite a long time. But, you know, a modern economy, kind of a just-in-time modern economy, obviously that's not great for shipping goods from these big manufacturing economies in East Asia to Europe. Because in a way, and one of the comments I found really interesting in your piece was how this has basically cut the world in two. Because if commercial traffic's not going through the Suez and it's too expensive to reroute around the southern tip of Africa.
So just going back to the owners quickly, for all of the owners in the South Pacific area, they're missing out on a lot of charter opportunities. So they're losing a lot of money because they can't obviously go back up through the Red Sea. So they're having to essentially just cancel all of their charters and try and find some alternatives.
So is that owners who would send their boats back to the Mediterranean for the charter season can't? So they're missing out on quite a lot of income.
Yes.
So who did you speak to for this piece?
I spoke to Bob Giles. He's the owner of the Nordhavn yacht Vivi Ray 2. He was in the South Pacific at the time and he was looking to transit the Red Sea, and he was in conversation with a lot of different security companies. He eventually decided against sending the ship through the Red Sea because there were just too many hoops to jump through. So now he's one of the people who expressed to me that he was missing out on quite a bit of charters that he had booked previously, and now he's having to reverse course and unfortunately go back the way that he came. He came all the way through the Mediterranean to the Caribbean, through the Panama Canal, and then across the South Pacific, and he's just going to have to backtrack.
So his intention was to fully circumnavigate, but this stopped him doing that.
It stopped him after a 3-year attempt.
Wow. And I'm just reading the piece now. So he was quoted as saying, "I just couldn't justify the cost and all the demands that they had. It was adding up to about $450,000 in insurance and fees. And even then, the transit still would have exposed the vessel and crew to danger. When it got to that point, we ultimately made the decision to cancel going through the Red Sea. $400,000, so $500,000, basically, dollars in extra fees and insurance premiums just to transit the Red Sea for a few weeks.
Yes. So the yachts are still needing to pay their... This is something that I didn't realize. The yachts are still needing to pay their annual rates. That hasn't changed. But they need to purchase a separate war breach policy, which covers a 7-day period, just a 7-day period for the vessel to pass through the affected area. They also need to secure additional kidnap and ransom insurance. And Bob told us that he was quoted at 10 million covers per individual crew member on board. And they also recommend having a team of 3 to 5 armed guards and even a military escort. Some firms have even developed anti-drone technology yachts can bring on board for the duration of the trip. There have been some interesting strategies that they've been utilizing to try and avoid any kind of conflict. So some vessels have been reflagged for the duration of their journey to remove the association with Israel, UK, or US. They've changed their name. There's even some who've tried a dog-legging maneuver where they start going towards south towards Cape Town, and then they turn off their AIS and go back up the Red Sea and try to trick the Houthis that way. But they've since started placing spy ships at the Gulf of Aden, so that strategy doesn't really work anymore.
Wow. So even if you aren't pinging on AIS, you're still likely to be spotted.
Yes.
So insurance premiums across the board have shot up for anyone looking to transit this region.
But going back to your question about how this is affecting the production side of the industry, it's caused a lot of headache for sure. I was talking to Stefano DeVivo from Bready Group, and he was saying that he had a lot of difficulty getting their sailing yacht masts for the Wally brand over from New Zealand, and it's causing a lot of further delays, and then which adds on a lot of extra cost. You've got some yards like Gulfcraft that are trying different workarounds. They've been flying parts to and fro by air carrier, but they're still running into the same issues when they start trying to deliver their completed yacht. And Simpson Superyachts, I was just talking to them, and they were telling me that they were planning their first transit through the Red Sea on a carrier vessel. So they're shipping yachts by carrier, which I think is a good sign. They're sending it directly through instead of going around. And I haven't heard anything since then, so I'd imagine that it was a success. So hopefully that means things are quieting down a little bit.
Mm. So it's just affecting production delays aren't ideal, especially given the last few years when production delays have almost become the norm, and now this is exacerbating that, obviously. But for private transits, it's just a matter of risk. So despite there being no recorded attacks on private vessels, the security companies are saying it's still not worth it.
Yeah, and there's some other issues that might pose in the Red Sea itself with all of the big projects going up, because there are so many countries there, like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Dubai, who are pouring so much money into developing superyacht hubs because they've gotten wind that it's such a lucrative industry. All of these places look that like they might suffer from a lack of traffic. As far as I'm aware, places like Neom Sindala project was supposed to open this year, but that's likely being pushed back. But these places have been investing so much money in developing all of these new destinations that I'm sure they still intend to open at some point, but it's most likely going to be a bit delayed. But I think it's important to remember that places like Saudi Arabia aren't actually in the official danger zone, so they're still very reachable from the Mediterranean. Maybe things like lowering the fees in the Suez Canal will help to encourage a little bit more tourism there.
And that's actually an important distinction, isn't it? So for people transiting the Suez to visit some of those giga projects that are being developed in Saudi, this is not going to affect them.
It shouldn't, no. I'm a little bit more worried for the more hard-to-reach places like Dubai.
Yeah.
But, they can still be reached by boats coming in from the South Pacific, which BoPro also shows is experiencing a big spike in traffic.
And you quote Rob McCullum from EOS Expeditions, a very well-regarded adventure specialist in the piece as well. And I felt like he was expressing a little frustration because this is a very specific threat in a very small area. But the general perception is it's creating a kind of cloud around cruising in the northern Red Sea, perhaps, and the wider Middle Eastern area, which is mostly safe. But this tiny little area of activity.
Yeah, and even further than that. So if you go a little bit more south towards the Seychelles and Socotra, he's experienced a drop in demand for those areas as well, even though they're not being affected by the current conflict.
So what does the future hold? I mean, is there any hope for?
Well, your guess is as good as mine, but based on the insurance people that I was talking to, they actually think that it's going to take a little bit longer than any of us are hoping. They say that it's going to need, for these insurance companies to even consider lowering their rates, there's going to need to be an extended period of no attacks after an official ceasefire has been called. So even after that agreement's been made, you're going to need to wait 3 to 6 months with no incidents for them to start bringing those premiums down.
So it's quite a long-term issue. So this issue is not going to go away until the Gaza conflict is resolved and Houthis stop flinging missiles at passing ships. And then we still have to wait 3 to 6 months before we can see premiums coming down and people feel confident, I suppose, with the cost and of...
I imagine it'll be a little bit of a chicken and egg situation. So maybe if owners start to feel a little bit more comfortable and they start passing through the area and then there's an increased volume of ships going through without any incident, that's going to inspire the insurance companies to bring their rates down a little bit sooner. Or it might be the case that all of the yacht owners are going to wait until the insurance companies bring their rates down before they even consider going through the area again.
But it's not the case, is it, that no boats are going through? Because Bob Giles, the owner of Vivi Ray 2, is quoted in the piece saying, so he monitors various Facebook groups sailors, admittedly sailors of smaller boats, that are still going through. So smaller sailing boats are transiting the area. But I guess they don't present particularly high value targets for...
No, they don't. But that was really interesting. So I didn't know about this Red Sea Facebook group. He was added to, and he was checking it almost daily when he was considering going through the Red Sea. And he was seeing daily posts about different motor and sailing boats going through the Gulf of Aden and no incidents being reported.
Interesting. And the Asian yacht manufacturers, obviously, who are exporting to Europe, as you mentioned, it's a tricky time for them. They've got to figure out how to get their boats over here. And Sunreef as well, obviously, they have a manufacturing plant, a European yard, but they have a manufacturing plant in Dubai. They've given up trying to ship their components to and from, so they're flying them in and out now, I understand.
That was Gulfcraft. I think Sunreef is still just going around Africa.
Okay. So what about Superyacht behavior, cruising patterns? Obviously, if the Suez Canal is out for a lot of people, that means access to the Maldives, Seychelles, Dubai, and even Indonesia and places in Southeast Asia. Do you see a kind of a return to more traditional kind of just Mid-Caribbean cruising patterns, basically?
Yeah, so like you mentioned earlier, we're essentially seeing the world being cut into two different cruising areas. So you've got a wealth of gorgeous touring destinations in the South Pacific, like Fiji, the Maldives, Indonesia, but no one's able to get to them at the moment, and they don't want to have to go all the way back across the South Pacific and then the Panama Canal to get back to the Mediterranean that way. So this year we actually saw, I think it was a 14% increase in the number of yachts going from the Med to the Caribbean who would otherwise have gone down the Red Sea to the South Pacific. So we are seeing a return to traditional cruising patterns between the Med and the Caribbean. And I think that distinction is going to become a little bit more pronounced this year.
Yes, that's fascinating. It's going to be really interesting watching the Caribbean season and measuring boat traffic in the Caribbean this year compared to previous years, because we would expect to see quite a significant spike in the number of superyachts going there, because then they can't go anywhere else.
It's going to be really busy in New Year's in St. Barts this year.
Yeah, I bet. Gabby, that's absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much. And if you want to read, just a reminder, if you want to read Gabby's piece, it is in the September issue, which is out in just a few days. It's a great one, and it's a really good examination of, you know, an issue that is primarily affecting the commercial sector, but having quite serious repercussions in the yachting space too.
I do have a question for you, though. I'm just curious. So based on everything we've covered, would you be willing to make the transit? Would you risk it?
No.
No.
No, because the cost would be prohibitive. I don't like the idea of sticking a load of armed guards on the boat. I think that would really color the whole experience. Not that necessarily you as an owner would have to go on that leg of the journey. You could meet the boat in X, Y, or Z. But look, crew are family, and you just don't want to put them in any kind of danger whatsoever, do you?
Do you know what that is essentially the response that all the owners that I spoke to kept coming back to? They said, you know, we're going to be flying everybody. We're going to be taking all the people we can off, and then we're going to fly them from one destination to the other side of the Red Sea. But their main concern was for those people on board.
Yeah. I think, as you know, life's too short. Why would you put someone's life at risk just to get your boat to the Maldives? You just hold out and, you know, hope this situation calms down. It might be, but it might be sometime yet, as we've learned. Doesn't look like there's any hope of a quick resolution in Gaza.
No, but in the meantime, there does seem to be a bump of tourism in places like South America and a little bit in the Northern Pacific, which are areas that haven't been as explored. So we might get some nice new cruising destinations out of it.
Well, should we end this section with a talk about every cloud has a silver lining? So Bob Giles, you end the piece with a wonderful quote from Bob Giles. So he said, you know, it's not the end of the world, basically, having, you know, foregoing my circumnavigation. He puts it off to another day. So he's going back across the Pacific. And he says at the top of his list is the Chuuk Lagoon. I guess that's the right pronunciation, in the Central Pacific, about 970 miles northeast of New Guinea. His eyes light up as he describes the local dive site, which is home to the world's largest vessel graveyard, owing to a US offensive against the Imperial Japanese Navy during the Second World War. I always try and turn negatives into positives, so we're excited to make the most of our journey, he says. And I still fully intend to return through the Red Sea one day so that I can finish that circumnavigation I have been after. So Bob will be back. Vivi Ray will be back. But he, like many yacht owners, are just postponing plans to transit the Red Sea for now. Or you can go around South Africa, battle the roaring 40s in the Indian Ocean.
Okay, well, I'll definitely have to go and check that out. I mean, way to give away the ending to my piece, but to everyone listening, there's a lot of other goods in there, so do go check it out.
Oh, it's full of fantastic information. It is really one not to miss. So, Gabby, your finger is firmly on the pulse of the business beat. And there's one other big story landed in your inbox recently, and that was, of course, San Lorenzo's acquisition of Swan.
Yes. So we heard about this back in December when they first entered into a memorandum of understanding with Nahler Swan that they were exploring the possibility. But we did just get news that they had agreed to a purchase agreement and then had just finished their first closing as of this week. And then the second part to the closing is expected to finish by 2028.
And they will own 100% of the share capital upon that final closing. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So why do you think this has happened?
I think we have a good idea. I mean, San Lorenzo indicated that they were looking to acquire a sailing yacht builder back in 2021 when it expressed interest in buying Prini Navi, which of course went to the Italian Sea Group. There actually seems to be a trend of Italian yards looking to create a presence in the sailing yacht market. So back in 2019, Ferretti Group had acquired Wally, and then the Italian Sea Group took over Prini Navi. And now San Lorenzo has Nahler Swan. So I think we'll be able to see a lot of development in that sector in the coming years. And but for Nahler Swan's side of things, we actually spoke to their CEO, Giovanni Pomati, back in January, and he told us that he's especially keen to have San Lorenzo's help in building out their motorboat division, given their expertise. So hopefully we'll be seeing some new exciting designs as well. So it does seem like there's something to be gained from either side.
Do you think there's a case of slight brand envy involved here? Because San Lorenzo, as we know, is one of the most prolific and successful superyacht manufacturers on the planet, but they are a single brand company. They have the Blue Game division, obviously, of slightly smaller boats and catamarans. But unlike, say, the Ferretti Group, which has kind of, you know, seven, I think, you know, quite large brands under the group. San Lorenzo, there's only so far you can take kind of a single San Lorenzo brand company. So by adding Swan, it just gives them a lot of more opportunity to expand their offering.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of an advantage to being known, especially for a single brand. So when you hear the name San Lorenzo, you immediately can picture exactly what that boat looks like, and you have a really firm idea of what that brand stands for. But yeah, there's, like you said, there's only so far you can push one single brand entity. So maybe they do want to start flexing their creative ability and come up with some new far out there designs, and they need another couple of brands to do that. So maybe this is just the start, and they'll be looking to either create their own new brands like Ross Navi did with No Limits recently, or look to acquire some new ones.
Well, the consolidation is a theme, isn't it, across the sector, as we've seen.
Horizontally and vertically.
Yeah. So this, you know, it might not be the end of the San Lorenzo acquisition spree. Wonder what other targets they've got their eyes on. I'm sure.
What's your bet on?
I'm sure there's a few. Well,
I mean, catamarans?
They've got to be complementary. Obviously, the catamaran sector, as you know better than anyone, is going great guns. Yeah, I don't know. It'd have been interesting. We should take a little poll in the office, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Who's going to be bought next? Watching the increasing consolidation of the superyacht market is interesting, as efficiencies are found everywhere in a market that's a little slower than what we've been used to over the last few years.
It does seem to be turning a new leaf, though.
Yeah.
I mean, Damen Yachting just posted their financial results the other day for 2023, and they broke, I mean, it's Damen Shipyards Group, so it includes Damen Yachting, but they just broke 3 billion euros of revenue. So that's a new record for them, and their order book has reached a record level for the third consecutive year. So maybe we are turning a curve.
We shall see. Well, we'll have all the stats, facts, and figures for you. Gabby is all over it. As Gabby mentioned, don't forget to subscribe to Boat Pro, because it is the most current, up-to-date bellwether of what's happening in the superyacht industry. If you want all the latest news, views, facts, and figures, it is a brilliant resource. And the Boat Pro platform as well. Subscribe to that, because it's a great resource for finding out what's going on in the industry before anybody else. Gabby, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
I've finally learned after 2 years how to pronounce your surname. Your dad will never forgive me.
What was it again?
Lazaridis.
There we go.
Thank you for my schooling. And thank you all for listening. I hope you've enjoyed that deep dive into what's happening in the Southern Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. I hope it's been enlightening, as well as a little insight into what's going on in Italy with San Lorenzo and Alto Swan.
More to come soon, hopefully.
Thanks, Gabby. And thank you all for listening to this special episode of Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Adam Geist and Naomi Wilson, and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time.